This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, the 23rd of February, 2007. From KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Aura Bogado. On today's newscast, we'll take a look at real and imaginary immigration sweeps in the United States. A new wave of threats targets witnesses against former members of Argentina's military dictatorship. And the week's political roundup featuring the presidential candidates' campaigns and issues. All that and more after these headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with today's headlines. Vice President Dick Cheney's visit to Australia has been greeted with protests for the second consecutive day. Hundreds of extra police and security personnel have been added to the Sydney streets to contain demonstrations against U.S. foreign policy. Minor scuffles broke out yesterday when police told anti-war demonstrators that they could not march to the U.S. consulate. 10 protesters were arrested. Australian Prime Minister John Howard's approval rating has slumped as over 500 Australian troops continue to participate in the war in Iraq. Activists also used Cheney's visit as an opportunity to rally against the detention of Australian citizen David Hicks, who has been imprisoned without charge at Guantanamo Bay for the past 5 years. A soldier who pleaded guilty to raping and killing a 14-year-old Iraqi girl and murdering her family has been sentenced to 100 years in prison. Sergeant Paul Cortez will be eligible for parole in 10 years. Another co-defendant in the case has already started serving his sentence of over 90 years. A total of 5 men have been implicated in the gang rape and quadruple homicide, including a soldier who was dismissed from the military before the allegations emerged. In Colombia, a scandal involving the influence of right-wing paramilitary forces in the government has grown to implicate high-level officials. Mike Caesar has more from Bogota.
The ex-head of Colombia's National Intelligence Service, Jorge Noguera, has been charged with conspiring with outlawed paramilitary forces to murder academics and union leaders. Right-wing paramilitary groups have dominated large regions of Colombia, massacred peasants, and trafficked much of the cocaine exported to the United States. The ongoing investigation into ties between paramilitaries and political elites has implicated mayors, senators, and other politicians. On Monday, the foreign minister resigned under intense political pressure after several of her close relatives were linked to the paramilitaries. 8 senators, all supporters of President Álvaro Uribe, are in prison. But the arrest of ex-intelligence service chief Noguera may have brought the scandal closest to Uribe, because Noguera was under Uribe's direct command. Noguera allegedly worked closely with the paramilitary groups and even erased records of their crimes. Although the scandal has not touched Uribe personally, it could hurt Colombia's chances of obtaining further aid from the Democratic-controlled U.S. Congress and might be an embarrassment to President Bush when he meets with Uribe next month. For FSRN, this is Mike Caesar in Bogota, Colombia.
The federal government announced yesterday that it has canceled plans for a controversial bomb testing site on western Shoshone lands. The so-called Divine Strike experiment would have entailed the detonation of hundreds of tons of non-nuclear explosives to test a bomb's ability to destroy underground bunkers. While the Defense Threat Reduction Agency did not give a specific reason for the cancellation of the test, it did state in a press release the decision was, quote, not based on any technical information that indicates the test would produce harm to workers, the general public, or the environment. In Washington state, 3 anti-nuclear activists known as the Ground Zero 3 have been sentenced to 2 years probation and fines for acts of civil disobedience at the Bangor Trident nuclear submarine base. Mark Taylor Canfield has more from Seattle.
A judge handed down a 90-day suspended sentence for each activist, including Shirley Morrison, a member of the Raging Grannies who just celebrated her 85th birthday. The protesters were sentenced to 2 years of probation on condition that they avoid further criminal law convictions. The anti-nuclear activists from the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action were found guilty on 2 charges of disorderly conduct for attempting to block the entrance to the Bangor Naval Base at protests last year. Morrison, Barrows, and Watson will each be required to do 64 hours of community service. The defendants say they will challenge the prosecutor's requirement that they also reimburse the Kitsap County Sheriff's Department for the cost of their arrests. Brian Watson still maintains that the Trident nuclear submarine fleet is illegal according to international law.
The whole point of Trident is to be able to launch a sneak attack on another country's forces, a weapons system which is designed specifically to be used first, and that is deeply immoral, and profoundly illegal.
This is Mark Taylor Canfield for Free Speech Radio News in Seattle.
A spate of violence has erupted in the usually peaceful West African nation of Senegal just before voters there head to the polls. Njaga Sek has more.
Violence has shot up almost everywhere in Senegal in the lead-up to Sunday's presidential election. Supporters of President Abdoulaye Wade and his challengers have clashed in Senegal's capital Dakar, Tambacounda, Nioro, and in many other towns across the country. Analysts warned that the avalanche of violence would reach its peak on Sunday, February 25th, Election Day. Other candidates say that President Wade is desperate to win a majority in the first round, as he is unlikely to win if the vote goes to a runoff. Senegal has a reputation as West Africa's most peaceful country. Human rights activists have condemned the recent violence, and the U.S. Embassy in Senegal has released a communique calling on political leaders to restore calm for a clear and transparent election. For FSIN in Senegal, I'm Njaga Sek.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
The U.S. federal government indicted three top executives of a national cleaning company for harboring undocumented immigrants and evading taxes. Nearly 200 immigrant workers hired by the company now face deportation. Yang Meishe has a story from Washington, D.C.
The defendants are three Florida residents. They run a cleaning service company called Rosenbaum Cunningham International. The allegation states that the company was staffed predominantly with undocumented workers. Its clients included restaurant chains such as Hard Rock Cafe and Dave & Buster's. Pat Riley is a spokesperson for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE.
They're able to put together cleaning crews, bring them into these restaurants. They usually work overnight, and they're usually gone before the restaurant who contracts with them knows even who was there.
The indictment says by hiding wages paid to its workforce, the company evaded federal taxes of over $18 million. The three defendants pocketed a chunk of the money and bought luxury boats and lavish homes. In addition, Riley says they may have taken advantage of their employees.
Generally, they're exploiting the workers, paying them less than they would get if it were legitimate employment, because you can threaten them. You can threaten with telling people that they are here illegally. Many of them have to adopt other identities other than their actual identity in order to work.
Wednesday night, the ICE raided 63 locations across the nation that contracted Rosenbaum Cunningham International and arrested nearly 200 undocumented workers. The roundup marked the latest wave in the Bush administration's campaign to crack down on employers and immigrant workers as Congress debates an overhaul of the nation's immigration laws. The ICE arrested more than 700 immigrant workers last year, up from a few dozen several years ago. Such a tough law enforcement approach evoked complaints from immigrants' advocacy groups. Christian Ramirez is the national director of the American Friends Service Committee.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents will go into the workplace, will handcuff workers, will drag workers in chains, put them in vehicles, and drive them to detention centers. In some cases, some of these immigrants are held for long periods of time in detention centers. For many of them, their family does not know what the whereabouts of their family members are for up to 48 hours.
Riley says the ICE is aware of these concerns.
We can assure you that when we detain people who we have apprehended because they have broken our laws, they are detained in circumstances that meet the highest standards of detention in this country.
Riley also says effective law enforcement can deter other employers from hiring undocumented workers. But Ramirez disagrees.
The push and pull factors are stronger than any of these enforcement tactics, are stronger than any of the walls that the federal government wants to put across the U.S.-Mexico border. And unless we look at those root causes of why people are being pushed out of their countries and coming into the United States, this issue will not be resolved.
The workers arrested in the latest raid face deportation, but they can appeal their cases before a court. For Free Speech Radio News, Ye Meixie in Washington, D.C.
In an effort to bring the issue of undocumented immigration up for discussion, New York University's College Republicans hosted a game yesterday titled Find the Illegal Immigrant. Members of the club presented their university ID cards to become immigration agents, looking for a so-called illegal in the crowd. The agent who successfully identified the target won a gift certificate. This controversial game sparked local organizers on and off campus to gather and protest the event, which they called racist and disgusting. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Mandana Mofidi was there on the scene.
In what is being called the most racist, disgusting game ever, the Student Republican Group at New York University unveiled a game called Find the Illegal Immigrant. Participants of the game are asked to search the campus to find the quote-unquote illegal immigrant, and the winner gets a prize. Members of the Republican group who present their NYU student ID become immigration agents looking for an illegal in the crowd. John Yoakum from the Student Republican group defends this game.
The game itself is like basically a game of hide-and-go-seek. Someone is in the park with a thing that says illegal immigrant. You take them to the table and you get a $25 gift card. It has nothing to do with being racist. All it has to do with is raising the issue of illegal immigration in this country, which is a huge problem that we need to deal with and that no one is willing to deal with in a peaceful fashion.
When we want it now! When we want it now!
The reason that we're having in this protest is because of the way that the event was conceived and advertised. It featured exclusively images of Mexican-Americans and Mexicans, which just blatantly pandered to racism and stereotypes and conceptions about who is illegal, who is not welcome here.
NYU student Annie Rudnick is a member of the Students Creating Radical Change. She is the main organizer for the on-campus protest against the NYU Republicans event.
This is an event that doesn't build trust. This is an event that makes light of a situation that impacts thousands, if not millions, of people's lives across the world.
My name is Francisco Guzman. I am a senior here at NYU studying economics. I'm the president of Lucha Latinos Unidos con Honor y Amistad. There's a lot of people here who are really fired up for the right reason. You can hear people are screaming because this is a wrong way to bring attention to an issue. I hope that they do, you know, get the message that this type of program will not be tolerated here at NYU, in New York City, or in America. We're at a point in America where immigrants play a huge role in the economy, in our daily lives, and this type of ignorant program will not be tolerated.
David Laska is the campaign and internship chair of NYU's College Republicans.
This is not an anti-foreigner event. This is not an anti-immigration event. It's an anti-illegal immigration event and the problems that specific illegal immigration causes. Is this event PC? No. Is it racist? Absolutely not.
Laska is also one of the main organizers of Find the Illegal Immigrant Game.
Attempts to do this civilly in the past have failed, so hopefully one that ruffles a little feathers will get people out and, if nothing else, get them thinking about the subject.
NYU student Zach Landsberg was the winner of the Find the Illegal Immigrant game. His reasons for participating?
I don't stand for what they stand for, but if they're going to set up a game with a condition of rules that are totally silly, and I can beat them at that game, then I'm showing how ridiculous they are.
Thanks to FSRN's Mandana Mofidi for that story. A congressional subcommittee held a field hearing late Thursday in New Orleans to address the city's ongoing housing crisis. Representative Maxine Waters promised to pass legislation to speed the delivery of federal money to homeowners, while tens of thousands who lived in public housing continue to fight for their right to return to the city. FSRN's Christian Roseland has the story.
After all is said and done, there's been more said than done.
Missouri Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver summed up the experiences of many in southern Louisiana who are still struggling with housing 18 months after Hurricane Katrina. The Road Home program, administered by Louisiana, was supposed to deliver billions in federal money to help homeowners rebuild. Instead, the program has become a metaphor for the failure of government in this troubled city. As of February 20th, less than 1,000 homeowners had received the money promised to them, while more than 100,000 applicants continue to wait. At the hearing, Walter Leger of the Louisiana Recovery Authority, the body appointed to oversee the money, blamed these delays on federal requirements.
I was told as a rookie in government a year ago, CDBG money is the best federal dollars you can get. It's got the least strings attached. You can just get it out and you can spend it. If that's true, congressmen and women, I don't know how the federal government ever spends any money.
Representative Waters promised yesterday to draft legislation to help speed the delivery of community block development grant money, including waiving a requirement for local government to match 10% of funds. However, Waters was careful not to let the Louisiana Recovery Authority escape blame for its role in the failure to get money to homeowners.
We're going to have an omnibus bill that will correct the need for the 10% match, and we're going to do some waivers and all of that. And also, I want you to be clear about the difference between CDBG requirements and the requirements that were created by the Home Road Home Program rather than CDBG.
Perhaps the most contentious issue in yesterday's hearing was the continued closure of thousands of units of public housing in New Orleans. Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development officials continued their pledge to begin demolition of four housing developments this spring to replace them with housing in mixed-income communities, which was greeted by loud jeers from the audience. James Perry of the New Orleans Fair Housing Action Center explained that the history of past redevelopments, such as the St. Thomas redevelopment, have created widespread popular mistrust both of the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development and of the Housing Authority of New Orleans.
St. Thomas was pitched as an opportunity to redevelop public housing and to make mixed-income housing that would give opportunity to public housing residents in New Orleans. 80% of the units were supposed to be set aside for low-income and public housing residents. Instead, at the end of the day, 80% of those units have gone to market-rate residents. This is the story of public housing in New Orleans. So when HUD or HANO comes in and says that they are going to redevelop housing and that we're going to get people back in public housing in only 2 years, it's very difficult, if not impossible, for us to believe it.
Meanwhile, tens of thousands of New Orleanians continue to live in FEMA trailers, some in trailer parks in rural areas far from their homes. Former public housing resident Gloria Williams testified for the panel on the experience of visiting relatives in a FEMA trailer park in Baker, Louisiana.
It's a concentration camp, Congress. You all ought to see it. They close together. It's a cow pasture. They 30 miles from a doctor. Come on now. We don't have no reason to live like that.
Local officials are quick to point out that delays in rebuilding critical infrastructure are affecting whether or not many choose to return to New Orleans. Walter Leger of the Louisiana Recovery Authority.
Some things become self-fulfilling prophecies. 60% of the people are questioning whether they're going to go back. They need to know they're going to have levee protection. So in our transition, infrastructure, schools, hospitals, roads, those things have to come before there's a feeling of confidence that the community is coming back.
This morning, the congressional delegation wrapped up its tour with a second hearing on affordable housing in Gulfport, Mississippi, and will return to Washington to present the results of these hearings. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Christian Roseland.
In this week's political roundup, Washington editor Leanne Caldwell takes a look at the campaigns and issues of the presidential candidates.
One Democratic candidate has already pulled out of the race. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack announced his withdrawal Friday.
It is clear to me that we would not be able to continue to raise money in the amounts necessary to sustain not just a campaign in Iowa and New Hampshire, but a campaign across this country.
Realizing he couldn't raise the money necessary to compete with top candidates, Senators Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and former Senator John Edwards. But top dollars do bring along pain. It caused rift in the Obama and Clinton camps as wealthy Hollywood donor and longtime Clinton supporter chose to back and give his money to Obama. Barack Obama was the only candidate to skip out on a Democratic forum held in Carson City, Nevada this week. The Silver State will be the second state in the Democratic primary, and Senator Clinton continued to defend her vote to authorize the war in Iraq to the dismay of the audience.
My vote was a sincere vote based on the facts and assurances that I had at the time. And I have taken responsibility for my vote.
Senator Joe Biden talked about his plan for Iraq, which includes a decentralized federal government giving more autonomy to the localities. Biden also talked about his idea to repeal the president's war authorization, a plan that has gained widespread support among the Democratic Party.
Where we revoke the president's authority that he was given under the authority to go to war, and we redefine it. And we redefine it. We say, Mr. President, you only can keep troops through up to 2008 in the following circumstances. On the border, training Iraqis, and denying al-Qaeda occupation of territory. What you can't do, Mr. President, you can't put them in a city of 6.2 million people knocking on doors in the middle of a sectarian war.
That idea could be proposed next week in Congress. Former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel has been out of office for decades, but the mishaps of the war in Iraq brought him back to politics, eyeing the top job.
The oil there is not worth one more American dead. It's not worth 1 ounce of blood.
John Edwards apologized for his vote on the war long ago, and he did it again this week in Carson City. But instead of focusing on the war in Iraq, he talked about domestic issues, health care, smart trade, and unions.
My mother and father have health care today because of the union. My younger brother, my only brother, has health care today because of the union.
So you need a president with no strings. A president with no strings. A president with no strings.
Also in Carson City, Representative Dennis Kucinich promised he would work for the people, not the special interest. And finally, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson highlighted his experience in the executive branch. Here he talks about energy independence.
The 65% in imported oil reliance is unacceptable. And we're going to go down to 10, and it's going to be done by public and private investment in renewable technologies.
As for the Republican nomination, Senator John McCain is attempting to distance himself from the president. He's a longtime supporter of the war, but McCain this week called former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld the worst ever, and he called the war in Iraq a train wreck that he deeply regrets. And former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney spoke in South Carolina Thursday night, where he focused on the war in Iraq and the war on terror.
Recognizing that it may not be popular, I believe the president's right. We need a troop surge. We need to support this government.
Romney also talked about the threat Iran poses. He supports tough sanctions and dismissed any notion of dialogue with that country. For Free Speech Radio News' weekly political roundup, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Human rights groups in Argentina report that the trials to convict former members of the military dictatorship for human rights abuses have been put on hold, and that the wave of threats against witnesses continues. FSRN's Marie Trigona has more from Buenos Aires.
Argentina's federal courts have virtually paralyzed upcoming human rights trials 5 months after the disappearance of Julio Lopez, a key witness who helped convict a former police officer for life. Lopez went missing on the eve of the landmark conviction of Miguel Echecolás, the first military officer to be tried for crimes against humanity and genocide. Groups worry that judicial roadblocks and an atmosphere of fear may provide former members of the military dictatorship a window to escape conviction. Patricia Sassa, a former political prisoner and torture survivor, is leading a case against 9 of her perpetrators in the province of Santa Fe. Currently, she is in a witness protection program after receiving threatening phone calls. She says that many of the witnesses have dropped out of the trial since the wave of threats began.
Las causas están claramente paralizadas. Yo antes del caso López,
the cases are clearly paralyzed. Before the kidnapping of López, I had a date set for the trial. The trial has been moved forward to no less than a year from now. This means a year of impunity, a year of shame, a year of being a witness whose life is in danger. When can I have a sense of peace? When these people have a firm sentence and are in jail. Now, please don't put them in the same place.
In recent months, human rights organizations have faced unrelenting threatening phone calls and emails defending crimes committed during the dictatorship. Hijos, an organization of children of the disappeared, is one of those groups. Ruben Gonzalez, son of a woman who was disappeared and member of Hijos, was forced into an unmarked car by 4 men on October 4th, who beat him while showing him pictures of activists and asking for their names. According to Gonzalez, many of the phone calls have been tracked at the federal prison where Echecolás and another 100 military officers are imprisoned.
Everything is on hold. Now that there are trials being held nationwide, many of the witnesses don't want to take part in the prosecution out of fear, because the threats continue. We are continuing to receive phone calls from the federal penitentiary. We at Hijos are particularly worried because we feel that we are an easy target. Many of our comrades are getting psychological help for the threats, and some of us are truly afraid. But we are sure that we aren't going to abandon the struggle.
Aparición con vida y castigo a los culpables.
is the 31st anniversary of Argentina's military junta in years. Human rights groups are preparing a series of events to commemorate the 30,000 disappeared and demand the safe return of Julio López. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona in Buenos Aires.
As Iraqi and U.S. troops continue sweeps of neighborhoods in Baghdad as part of a new operation against Iraqi militants, already besieged Palestinians in Iraq say they're being subject to further attacks and arrests. Hiba Dawood files this report.
A delegation from the Palestinian government recently traveled to Iraq to meet with Iraqi leaders and discuss the possibility of allowing Palestinians to travel safely to northern Iraq. The delegation announced the Kurdish government had agreed to allow Palestinians to set up a camp there, but Kurdish officials denied that any agreement was reached, though they say that they are willing to allow camp if the Iraqi or Palestinian governments will issue travel documents to Palestinians wishing to enter Kurdistan. Mahmoud Uthman, a Kurdish politician, says that Iraqi leaders in Baghdad were waiting until after the new security operation had been completed before dealing with the Palestinian situation. However, Uthman admitted many Palestinians weren't likely to survive the outcome of operations in Baghdad.
If the security plan succeeded, and if stability and peace happened in Iraq, maybe they will stay, and the Iraqi government will protect them. The danger is there because, to be honest, there are groups that target them.
Uthman also thinks that an agreement is still possible between the three sides.
Within Iraq, the three sides are trying to have a solution through agreements between the Palestinian governments. The efforts are in existence anyway. The Kurdish side has no problem. They will help them with all the available potentials.
There are approximately 10,000 Palestinians in Iraq. Some of those families first came to the country after the creation of Israel in 1948. Others followed in subsequent diaspora, but none have ever been granted a citizenship. Abu Mazen is a Palestinian living in Baladiyat.
We are miserable. The minute the new security plan started, it was implemented on us. They came to the Baladiyat camp and arrested three of us. In any checkpoint now, they ask for birth certificates. When I tell them I am Palestinian, they arrest me. The death squads, the minute they know you are Palestinian, they think you're a terrorist, a Sunni. You must die. They think we are supporters of Saddam's government. If I was benefiting from that, I would have gone to Syria or Jordan. Do you know where our right of return is? It is in the morgue.
Abu Mazen also said he hoped an agreement allowing Palestinians safe passage to Kurdistan would also include allowing them passage to a third country. He said Palestinians in Baghdad feared a situation that would simply make them refugees in another part of Iraq or another Arab country. I am Hiba Dawood for FSRN.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. Our newscast is produced by Tina Gysi and Monica Lopez. Our Washington editor is Leanne Caldwell. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Our technical production team is at KPFA in Berkeley and includes Antonio Ortiz and Eric Klein. You can listen to this newscast in its entirety online at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. We welcome your comments, questions, and story ideas. Just email us at comments@fsrn.org. From KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Ara Abogado.